Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter shipping.
On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
No one kind of has a go at the authorities that much, do they?
Do we have a bone to pick with you?
Stop. It's always about me.
Probably in the past 24 hours moved into the background.
Well, what on earth is he talking about?
He's talking about the media.
That's what I thought was most impressive about his victory.
Talk it through your pocket.
So back
again.
The runner-up.
It's an interesting point you bring up there, and I raised it with...
Absolute folly of track walkers is being highlighted by all these issues at the moment.
The leader had gone off so quick, and it had actually burnt off for the pursuers.
You know, the upside is enormous as to how far he can get.
But all I'm saying, Sam, is that I'm not having a go at the professionalism of the track walkers. I'm just saying that...
Hang on.
Force the owner into the back of a car and drive off in the other direction.
Welcome to The Verdict. Who will Matty Stewart offend this week?
I was offended by the opener and I was responsible for most of it.
That was brilliant, that opening.
Great to welcome back into the chair, Jakey Norton. This time last week you were watching the Super Bowl and now you're on The Verdict. Things just keep getting better.
Onwards and upwards for me, Nugget. Yeah, it was an amazing experience, the Super Bowl. I went to Houston thinking I was, you know, attending the biggest show in town, but... all anyone wanted to talk about there was the Everest at Randwick. So.
Matty's words filtered back over the other side of the states. It'll be interesting to see what Pete Melandis has to say to Matty Stewart this morning. We're going to have a chat to him a little later on The Verdict. Matty's just gone a little pale. We'll also have a chat to Rupert Lee, who wants to talk about the grey flash to Tarqua. First of all, from an MRC point of view, well done on Saturday. Jackie and I took our little daughter Maddie out there to the Clip Clop Club. First time being out there. It is brilliant for the kids out there. It was sensational. We had a great day weather-wise, great day racing. My only concern is 8,500, which I know is what the club was looking at, but why can't we get more than that on a perfect day with no football in Melbourne?
Yeah, I did notice that you were there, courtesy of the social pages in the Herald Sun yesterday. You have a beautiful
slow
family.
Day.
Well, the women in the family anyway.
Correct.
Six out the social pages.
He was pap hunting on Saturday. Rubbish. Yeah, look, it's for this time of year, over the last few years, it's a good crowd. But you're right, it was a beautiful day. I suppose there are plenty of things on in Melbourne, despite, you know, the talk about there being no enormous sport like the AFL. But the AFL women's has been, you know, the amount of money the AFL have been spending on marketing that. And they had 6,000, I think, to Collingwood and Melbourne on Saturday. The Nitro Athletics are in town as well. So point taken. I just don't think that race you can expect to have 30 or 40,000 people at this time of year, unless you have a Black Caviar or someone like that come to town. You know, we'd love to see the days of yore where there'd be 50,000 every Saturday at the races, but with the service that we get from racing.com and so forth in our homes, I can understand why, you know, crowds are trending in that direction, but solid crowd and a great afternoon, I thought, at the Heath.
Be interesting to see what they can pull in Sydney today as well.
They've opened the gates.
Yeah. And
which is a great idea.
They're all good gestures, because sometimes you do, and the MRC does a bit of that as well. Yeah, it's sometimes for no good reason, things just pop up. The Chinese New Year celebration at Moonee Valley, which they've cornered a market there. They get a massive night crowd there. There's a pink racing... what's the pink day in Sydney? It's out of nowhere.
The cricket.
It's when... No, they have a gaze behind this pink race day. It's either at Rosehill or Randwick, where they get a massive peak crowd out of season at that particular meeting as well. We'll get one of the guys... out the back to just Google that to work out when that exactly is, because it's out of season. So,
well, we can discuss this further with Peter Melandis, and we want to talk about the Everest with him as well. And then, look, Lee Friedman rang him before. We're going to have a chat to Lee, because we were talking on the Breakfast Club. Adam White said, well, why can't we run races every 8 to 10 minutes? And I said, well, don't be ridiculous. We can't do that. And Lee Friedman rang up and said, we can run races every 10 minutes.
I'd like to hear Lee explain how, because I can't possibly see how. We couldn't run them at 30 logistically. I don't know how we can run them.
That was, again, Peter Verlandis and Racing New South Wales.
It was the logistics of the day, too, that the participants, the objection from the participants was that it was too unwieldy. Okay, well, you take 10 horses to the races, Mr. Roll the Eyes, and with limited staff and affordability, and see how you do with that rapid turnaround and mounting yards and distance and travel and jockeys getting off one and back on another and recovery and things like that. I'm stunned that Lee Friedman feels this is possible, and I'm looking forward to hearing him explain how.
All right, we'll talk about that a little later. First of all, let's talk about the action on Saturday. And the big decision. We're still waiting. We've put in calls to Mark Guest, Craig Williams. They're in a cone of silence. Guesty, I know you love your phone. You probably ran the battery.
Cone of silence taking, never worked for me.
Taking too many selfies at the St Kilda Festival yesterday. The phone might be a little flat, but we've spoken to Kieran Mark here and said they've heard nothing. Cole McKenna this morning said that Luke Nolan's probably in the box seat for Jukebox if Craig Williams turns it down. Spoke to Robert Smurden. He said that they'd love to get Joe Marrera if Williams turns down the ride on property. That may not be logistically workable. And Dwayne Dunn. Is that Mark Guest?
Could be Guesty.
David Hayes, I just clunked him. Well, I had to because I'm on air.
Oopsie daisy.
Well, hang on, I'll go out and answer this.
Well, he might have the catchy result. Matty's just going out to have a chat to David Hayes.
This is outstanding live media. But I was fascinated by Craig Williams' comments in the saddle. Sam Holland interviewed him on racing.com straight after the Blue Diamond Prelude on Saturday. And they were conveniently just trotting back past Kieran Maher's stable. And he said, well, Jukebox is just in there, so it's not necessarily fait accompli that he'll be riding catchy. But, there was a conversation on Twitter yesterday about, ratings and the fact that this lot in Melbourne of two-year-olds, possibly aren't up to the same equivalent in Sydney. But I think
Pariah was enormous behind property.
Pariah was enormous, quite right. And he's obviously was one from one in Sydney before coming to Melbourne. But I love the way that Catchy chased, and she did it again in that early January meeting as well. She hasn't raced right on the pace and been asked to break the clock. But I love the way that she chased and chased hard.
She gives me the impression the further you go, she was racing away from Limestone. And if that was another 100 metres, she would have won easier.
Yep. And Limestone seems to me that she's a racehorse as well. She attacks the line and chases hard, just like Catchy does. But I think that's a great indication that Catchy's a very good racehorse. Whether or not she smashed the clock is another question. But stepping up to 1,200 metres, and as these two-year-olds get up in distance, how fast they can go on pace becomes less of a concern. And I just love the way that, like I said, that she chased. But, Matty, any further light?
Well, I just discovered two things. A, Hazy's not a regular listener of The Verdict.
David.
Disappointing. David. Very disappointing.
And B, it was no answer from Willow, but he said it's going to be interesting because he's got such close connections to the connections of the three main horses that he's still mucking around with. So it's more about the wider considerations than the horses themselves, because the horses are all even.
The political answer.
It's political. Very strong, future. Very solid with Colin McKenna. Probably wouldn't mind getting back on Jamaica and maybe an Australian Cup or something. And I think there's even family connections with property. You know, you upset the family. And then Jukebox. The other one, Catchy, very strong connection to the... So he may as well just play Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Mo and do it publicly and say, hey, I haven't really made a decision.
Like a barrier draw.
Yeah, I think, and to not make it political, why not do it randomly so he doesn't get blamed for dumping anything? So
he should turn it into a Twitter poll or something like
that. Yes, he should really do his own little Twitter poll.
Now, that is the modernisation of racing. Who would you ride? You'd be on Catchy Jake?
Yeah, I think so. I guess she's the one that's been exposed most. Jukebox, less so. He might be the one.
Geez, confident Kieran Maher. Yeah. He's got this air of confidence that Jukebox has just jumped out of the ground.
Yeah. So the greatest scope for future performance might lie with Jukebox, but hard to go past Catchy on the way.
Matty, who would you make a sway back?
I remember when Formality won last week, I thought to myself, this has probably got three lengths up its sleeve and improvement. This is the one I want to be on. But then every time I see another one, I think the same thing. And they're not just all even in the market. They're all very similar types of two-year-old. None of them is a blindingly fast, one-dimensional rancher extreme choice. I'm not saying they weren't multi-dimensional.
Murphy's Blue Boy.
There's no Murphy's Blue Boys there. So And that's why this whole, I don't know whether when I took my call, this is what you were talking about, but this whole, oh, they're not very good because they're even and there's a different winner each week. I'm convinced in my own mind that this is an outstanding crop of two-year-olds. I mean, look at Hoots and all these things that are popping up everywhere. And every trainer you talk to says, this is the best crop I've ever had. These are all stars. In any other year, they'd be standouts and lots of stuff. So race times and that are one thing, but I wrote something in the paper today. Race times are determined not by the winner usually, but by the speed of the pack.
Yeah.
And they can't, you know. So they're not going to be running 1.9, you know. They're not going to be running, smashing a minute for 1,000, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't, I remember one of the ratings guys had Rubik as the best two-year-old performer for 20 years a few years ago, and it turned out to be a squib when it came to the diamonds.
For 1,200, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I think it's broadly acknowledged.
With all due respect to his stud career.
I think it's broadly acknowledged that the crop of two-year-olds is strong, but the criticism from north of the border is that the Victorian group isn't particularly strong on the basis of they're not smashing the clock and things like that, which I don't necessarily agree with. Like,
I get the impression that the Snowden camp think Pariah is a good couple of lengths behind Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Pariah came down and he was probably, I mean, property was outstanding, but Pariah was almost the run of the race in that.
Pariah was the run of the race. Mm. This is the other thing about this Williams fascination that's going on at the moment is Limestone's a damn good chance and it's never been a Craig Williams horse. Mm-hmm. Pariah is another one and there's one or two others as well. So,
and the barriers, this is exactly what happened with Ollie. Like, ideally, you'd love to wait for the barriers, but if he chooses Catchy draws the outside and Jukebox draws four, well I dare say you'd say I'd have ridden
D. Oliver last year.
Exactly right.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. We all, you know, our stomach turns if the things that we like are allocated wide barriers. I don't think at Caulfield...
it cost Fine Arty the Blue Diamond last year.
Possibly, yeah, but I mean, you saw...
The extremity example, yeah.
Earthquake won from 16 a couple of years ago. There's only one turn, so the key is to get cover, particularly if there's a northerly blowing, which there can be on warm days at this time of year at Caulfield. But I'm really excited. I mean, if Joe Moreira does come to Caulfield to ride property or any
imagine
others,
having Joe Moreira ride Moore in the Blue Diamond.
Incredible. Particularly, Hong Kong Jockey Club will be simulcasting the Blue Diamond meeting, or I think seven races from it into their local market. So it'd be really exciting to have Joe Moreira there to fly the flag for Hong Kong as well.
The guys can't find anything on the pink race day, but I want someone on Twitter to back
the
me
Jane
up
McGrath
here.
It was either a
one-off or it's a regular thing. There is a big out-of-season race day in Sydney with a certain theme, whether it's a breast cancer theme or something like that has really taken off. I just hope it exists.
It's huge. It's a good thing.
It's huge in my imagination, by the sound.
Has such a good turn of foot. She got caught behind without room again. D-Lane did it again. Limestone's a big chance. And what about you, Jake? You MRC rubbing your hands together because 110,000 jumps in with the late entry fees for property and also Limestone. Got an SMS here. Interested from Jake's point of view from a club basis, how much money does gate taking make a difference, or how much money is there in difference for gate taking? We see people opening up the gates in Randwick today. Why couldn't Caulfield do something similar?
Yeah, I understand that argument, and there are several meetings over throughout the calendar where we do that. The counter argument is that you should place a premium on your premium product, and it was a Group 1 race day on Saturday. Obviously, it was free for kids under the age of 17 at Caulfield on Saturday, and a lot of the crowd at the Heath were kids. In terms of the financial difference, the Melbourne Racing Club, and I can really only speak on our behalf, but we made a pretty concerted effort or alteration to strategy a few years back where there was, you know, 10 years ago there was 55,000 people at the Caulfield Cup. A lot of those would be slightly intoxicated teenagers or, you know, youths. Now we focus on a customer that's going to come and spend money on course, whether it's through...
But have you got a figure of, like, say, 8,000? What's your gate takings?
Well, it depends on the breakdown of the crowd. So on Saturday, there would have been probably 3,000 kids there, and they all come in free. So it's a
good,
bit
comfortable crowd, too. I mean, the downside of big crowds is that there's a big crowd.
Yeah,
so,
but say there's you know, a couple of thousand paying customers at $10 a head. It's not. We're not talking sheep stations by any stretch.
It's your shop window. It's not what you justify yourself on days, is it? Yeah. I mean, we had Black Caviar rocking up to Lightning Stakes meetings where the crowd was low teens. So, you know, even the champion, there's no assurance that the champion...
I wonder, when you've opened the gates before, do you see any upswing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
So you get a lot more people coming when it's free, obviously.
Yes.
That Sydney race meeting that I was talking about, it did exist.
Oh, hang on.
It was a one-off about 6 or 7 years ago.
According to SBS, George, our producer, has put up. So...
No, and to others who have...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, well, so crowds, it obviously stood out in your mind.
One thing, and I know you're going to discuss this and Lee's going to come on, one thing that I think is a kind of a distraction sometimes when people try and come up with these imaginative ideas that take you nowhere is how do you reinvent racing off the back of the Big Bash and all these other things. Sometimes when you're comparing an apple to an orange, you can try all you like to change the basic parameters of a sport. And there's some things you cannot change, and you have to work within.
Isn't Matty trying to get a score on the board before the debates begin?
No. I'm just saying because this is off the back of crowds and all this stuff. If you bend over backwards to try and attract autumn crowds, and you advertise the bejesus out of it, and you do all these sorts of things, and don't come up with a result, sometimes you've got to learn that there are limitations to what you can do without meaning you stop thinking. But there are certain things that are just a waste of time.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little later. Don't jump ahead too much because I want to talk about the main race, the C4 Blackheart, but. I think he's underrated. He is a superstar.
No, he's not. He's just a good horse.
Are you serious?
He's not underrated. He's rated exactly accurately.
He's not as good as Winx because she is a superstar.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, but don't you believe he's an underrated horse? He's won $3 million in prize money.
Who's underrating him? We all reckon he's a really good horse.
Well, you've been completely seduced by Hartnell, Matty. How do you compare Blackheart Bart to Hartnell?
Hartnell's a better horse than Blackheart Bart.
On what grounds?
The fact that he just is.
Oh, because you say so.
He was smashing fields, you know. Like, I mean,
over 2,000, maybe.
I don't want to compare two horses who I think are great in their own right. I mean, they're both terrific horses, and they're probably the second and third best horses in Australia. I mean, I think that's where they are. I mean, and the fact that we separate them so quickly from Winx just tells you just how extraordinary she is. So that's why I don't like you spruikers like you Blue Eyes attach superstar to horses.
No, I'll retract superstar, but he is a bloody good horse.
But who is underrating him? No one.
Well, I just don't think there's a general hype about Blackheart Bart.
There is, to the measure of how good he is. He's a very good horse, but he's not a champion. He's not. Are you saying he's a champion?
No.
Well, he's not. Well, he was a superstar before, and now he's not.
How do you define champion, though? I mean,
Winx.
I mean, there are obvious examples, but
all right.
I suppose you have to draw the line somewhere.
Where do we put Chautauqua? Is Chautauqua a superstar, which I believe you've quoted him as saying he's a superstar.
Yeah, he has superstar qualities. He's an enigma. He's a great horse, just so is Blackheart.
Has he dropped a level?
I think he's matured and changed a bit, and I think he's got to be focused in a slightly different direction.
We're going to have a chat to Rupert Lee in a moment. I know there's been a bit of angst from Rupert and the Hawks camp about Greg Miles, what he said in the call, and what a few other commentators have been saying about Chautauqua, but what was your gut feel of the run on Saturday?
First impression was, when you start making excuses for a megastar like Chautauqua and, he ran the quickest this and this, but now I tend to think also that he was four lengths off Super Cash at the 600 and he wasn't able to run her down.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hitting a bigger flat spot than he used to and it lasts a bit longer. I just think he's a great horse who now has either got fed up with chasing or he's matured and he's comes to hand a bit less rapidly. I think they've just got to step him up in trip. I think we've all been waiting for the day that they step him up in trip because we know that he can do it. And the more relaxed tempo might just boost his own confidence and things like that. I just think he needs to be steered in a different direction to races where he can just keep winning. And if he goes in these 1,400-metre weight for age races, he'll then just start winning again. At the moment, if they stick to the sprints, they're going to lose more often than they win. And that's not Chautauqua. They've got to put him in races that he deserves to be in. You know, the soft kill weight for age 1,400s and things like that.
I don't quite understand this notion that the sky's falling in with regard to Chautauqua. I thought it was a bloody good run.
He ran the best splits.
Yeah, well, and
but look, he's a victim of his own success.
On a warm day at Caulfield, on a good three, they've run less than about 3/4 of a second outside the track record. So they've run pretty good time. When you've got a horse.
He didn't smash 10 and he didn't smash 22 for his last 400 and 200.
No, he didn't. But, they've run decent time and a horse that's on pace has run that time. When you're trying to make up was it four lengths or something in the last 400 under those circumstances?
It was a great run, but I think most run. People in
but
there...
But we're making good horse excuses for a great horse.
Super like, cash,
they're the excuses
I'm a
you
star.
Make for a good horse,
beating.
Not a great horse.
You wouldn't have thought that.
Well, I mean, I'm a star's a Group 1 winner. She's three. Super Cash is probably underrated as well. Perhaps not so now. We'll see how she progresses this campaign. But yeah, sure, she's not a Group 1 sprinter, certainly not a proven one. But like I said, when you're running time on the pace, you're going to have to be an absolute freak of nature to run it
and
down.
He's always been a victim of his own quirk, which is why we love him so much, and that is that he's got to do the Houdini because he puts himself at a back mark. So I just think if he can put himself at less of a back mark and you find the right races, then he's earned that opportunity now, I think, at this stage of his career.
Well, yeah. Let's have a chat to the senior part owner in Chautauqua, Rupert Lee, and get his thoughts now that the dust has settled from Saturday. Good morning, Rupert. Thanks for joining us on The Verdict. What was your initial thought of the run on Saturday?
You're not knocking my horse, are you?
Far from, Rupert. I was very encouraged by the run. Matt Stewart, on the other hand,
no,
he's sticking
you heard
boots
what
right
I
in.
Said.
He's gone.
Heard
what
enigma.
Heard. Well, he's always been an enigma.
mate, he's a good topic, isn't he? This horse. He's everyone's got their opinion on what happened on Saturday. I've got no doubt, and they're all entitled to their opinion. But you know, John and I, we caught up yesterday, let the dust settle, looked at all the sectionals. At the end of the day, we're extremely happy with the outcome. I don't need to tell you, and I know it was difficult on Saturday to get the sectional for some reason, but straight after the race, Matty, when I spoke to you, I thought his run was terrific. What we wanted to see was the horse actually hitting the line as hard as what we know he can, and he did that. He broke 11, I think, for the last 200, which I don't think any horse in the day did that. And everyone's saying, but he's not the old Chautauqua, we still should have won. I've gone, well, mate, I don't think so, because even that morning I said we were vulnerable in a seven-horse field, no speed, lead at bias track, giving that sort of start. I mean, I don't care who you were. No horse could have made up that sort of ground to win that race. But all that said and done, is he the same Chautauqua? No, I don't think so. I think he hasn't lost his ability, but what we do know about him is we need to take him up in distance. And that'll get you happy, because I know you've been looking for this horse to get up to 1,400, but he doesn't have that same dash over 1,000 or 11 that he did have, but that doesn't mean to say he's lost his will to race and chase, and he hasn't lost his ability, and that is for sure, and he proved that on Saturday. So we've had a bit of a reassessment on where he's at, and we've got to make our mind up whether we now go to the 1,200 at in the Newmarket, or do we go to the Canterbury Stakes up there at Rose Hill.
Tell us it's the Canterbury Stakes, Rupert.
Matty, there's every chance that's probably what we'll maybe do. We're going to look at the weights and take a deep breath and have a look at it. But just going back to what I said before, he has not lost his ability. He hasn't lost that will to chase. And I think once again we go back to his three-year-old days. He won Hawkesbury Guineas, should have won a Scone Guineas, all over 1,400. So we know he's a 1,400 metre plus horse. And I'd say, without making a statement, I'd say the Canterbury Stakes are definitely on the agenda, 1,300. And that will then tell us, do we then go to the TJ? And this one will get you thinking, Matt, is do we go to the George Ryder and have a bit of a contest with Winks?
Well, that
gee, we would love that.
If they couldn't get a crowd to that, then you'd put the queue in the rack for crowd marketing, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Hey, Rupert, Jake here. Has just interested to know whether Chautauqua's training program has changed at all this preparation, with it in the back of your minds that he may step up over a longer trip. Has he been... has there been any education that he might sort of settle closer to the lead in a longer race or things like that? Has Wayne and the guys changed tack at all?
No, we haven't changed tack at this particular point, because we're training for a sprinting preparation. Yep. with it in the back of our mind that he would tell us early days whether we need to adjust that and go to plan B, which we always had in the back of our mind as he got older, we would take him up in distance. So I think we had to see him get through Saturday, and I thought Saturday was a terrific race to make a decision on, and what it did answer was he still got that mad, ferocious appetite to compete, because he did. He actually hit the line as hard as what he's always done. But, you know, all that said and done, we spoke yesterday about going up in distance, and that's something which I'm sure John will make his mind up on how he trains the horse going forward. So we've got a bit of time on our side the next week or two, but the weights will be out. When do the weights come out for the Newmarket?
We'll find that out. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure about that.
He'd get 58 and a half or 58, wouldn't he?
He'd have to be 58.
Probably think he would, and then Mike's going to get cranky because he wants to run Tabachi in it.
Oh, you couldn't run him in the Newmarket, could you?
Who, Tabachi?
No, the Grey Flash.
Mate, the Grey Flash, Matt, if I had to walk away from yesterday's meeting saying would I, wouldn't I would probably think we won't, but that's once again John Wayne's and Michael's decision. And you know what we're like. At the end of the day, you let those decisions be made by the captain coach. We don't interfere. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame trainer. You let him make the call. And he'll know exactly what he should be doing with the horse. And we never questioned John Hawkes. We never questioned when he put him out straight after the Manicato. But I'm sure it's in the back of John's mind now. We've definitely got to get the horse up to more distance, which means you've got to readjust your thoughts about Hong Kong. Even, you know, we had thoughts in the back of our mind whether we went back to Hong Kong and then on to Ascot. But after yesterday's meeting, I think it's going to be more we stay here, Canterbury Stakes, and that would then determine whether we go TJ or whether or not, as I said, you go down the path and try the George Ryder. But the George Ryder might come a bit soon to take him from 12, say, from 1,100 up to 1,500 in a short period of time. And that's the only thing which may deter John from going down the George Ryder path. But that doesn't mean to say in 6 months' time he won't be trying the horse over 1,400 or a mile.
Just three mini scenarios, just three races that pop into everyone's head. Just a quick sort of yes, no, maybe. The Futurities in 2 weeks, 1,400. And then there's two where he'd have to carry weight. But 165,000 late entry for the Doncaster, and then there'd be a Stradbroke in the winter as well. Any of these races on the radar?
Look, maybe...
Futurity.
The Futurity is no. The answer's no.
Come on, Rupert.
The Newmarket weights come out on the 28th, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll tell you what we should do, and I was talking to Michael about it on Saturday, and we're talking about the Everest, and I know we're getting off the subject a little bit, but... Tell me, why haven't we, this is Victoria, why don't we get smart and keep thinking proactively, which is what New South Wales do, whether it's good or bad or wrong. At least they're trying something, which I love. And I'm saying, tell me one weight for age mile of 1,400 metre race in this country that's worth a lot of money. Now, we've got 1,200 metre weight for age races. We've got 2,000 metre, mile and a half. Why can't we, in Victoria, get our heads together and have something special, like a seriously good $3 or $4 million weight for age 1,400 or 1,600 metre race? And everyone's going to say, well, you're only doing that because you've got Chautauqua and you want to take him up in distance. But Chautauqua's going to be running at that level for another, say, 2, 3, maybe years. But I'm talking about the future of racing in Victoria, where you're trying to come up with something different to, you know, just get a major race down here. And
well, something glaring, Rupert, that Flemington doesn't have, and there's an increasing reluctance for people to embrace the straight, and there's so many feature straight races. There isn't one feature 1,400 metre race at Flemington of note, is there?
Not a group one. No.
And I'm agreeing with you, and it's, to me, I just sit back because every year we've got the same races, and I've gone, yeah, well, that can get a bit boring, and you only need to see what they've done with cricket to try to get cricket revitalised, and I think you've got to do the same with racing or any sport, football as well. You've got to keep looking at it and find out how we can make changes and make things better, but... And I'm not saying we've got to have a $12 million race to compete against the Everest, but if we had a $4 million weight for age 1,400 or 1,600 metre race down here at the right time of year, it's not about the money. It's about attracting the right horses and the best horses, and you would still get the best horses in the world competing for $4 million on a weight for age scale over a mile or over 1,400. And, you know, when you go back to the Everest, it might be a lot of money, but at the end of the day, the Melbourne Cup's the Melbourne Cup, and it will always be the number one race in this country. But at the end of the day, we need to start looking at other options to bring and attract the right horses and the right races, and I think you need to have those weight for age miles and 1,400-metre races.
I like your thinking, Rupert. We need a bit of outside-the-square thinking. And, mate, thanks for coming on and giving us an update on Chautauqua. So at this stage, Newmarket unlikely, and gee whiz, we've got fingers crossed for maybe a mouth-watering clash with Winx and the George Ryder. We're getting Peter Volandis on now. I think he's probably just dropped the phone in anticipation of that. Mate, thanks for having a chat to us.
No, could you imagine Golden Slipper Day, and you've got a Golden Slipper, and then suddenly you've got a Winston Chitalpa racing in the George Ryder? Well, I don't know which one would be at the biggest airplay, would you?
They might even get 8 to 10,000 at Rose Hill that day.
Look, yeah, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, and at the end of the day, look, it's spoken about it. I know John loves the race. If we feel the horses at this distance and we can get him fit enough for the run, then obviously that'll come on the radar, but we are talking about it.
Thanks for that, Rupert. Speak soon.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Rupert Lee. Now, we've got to get Peter Volantis on now because he's about to go into a meeting. So, Peter, I appreciate you taking the time to have a chat to us. I want to talk about today with Winx, but it's something you probably weren't thinking of, a possible clash with Chitalpa and Winx.
No, that's great news. Any promotion for racing is big news, and that one will be massive news.
Just before we talk about the Everest, which we do want to discuss briefly with you, the decision to move Saturday's Apollo Stakes to today, how much discussion and debate did that cause, or was it a pretty easy decision in the end?
It was a pretty easy decision in the end. I mean, you have to rely on forecasts, but I've just had a report from my chief vet to say that it would have been very cruel to conduct to travel horses to the race course, let alone them racing. You know, they would have been under significant discomfort. And you've got to also appreciate you've got a lot of staff at work. You've got barrier attendants, you've got strappers, and of course the jockey. We weren't going to put any of those people's safety at risk. In the end, the decision was very easy. We had a number of trainers call us during the day, saying that their horses were in distress on that day on Friday, which was very hot. So, you know, it was an easy decision in the end. We left it as late as possible to get the most reliable forecast. We were in constant contact with the Bureau of Meteorology. And you've got to remember, we don't use the temperature. We use a measurement called the wet bulb. Now, what the wet bulb takes into account is humidity and wind. And in the morning in particular, the humidity was extremely high. We've never had a wet bulb reading as high as it was. So in the end, it was a very easy decision.
You've opened the gates today. You've pushed Winx back to 540, which I think is a great idea for people post-work. What type of numbers are you hoping for today?
Look, it's hard to say. You know, I think we've received more coverage in the press about moving the meeting to Monday with Winx than what we did before the race with Winx. So, you know, we are expecting a big crowd, especially the fact that it's been put on after work. It's also Tim Warner, who's a great supporter of racing, called on Saturday and wanted to put the race on 7.2, so it will also be on 7.2 free-to-air this afternoon. You know, there's a lot of other good races on the program, so we are expecting a decent crowd.
Pete, I know you're busy, you've got to go to a meeting, but just quickly, we got you on, or I had a chat to you about the Everest last week when it was announced. Now, I'm not sure if you heard Matty Stewart last week, but we had a, I guess you'd call it a robust discussion about the Everest. Matty's looking at me now like he's going to kill me, but here's a snapshot of what Matty had to say about the Everest last week.
The fact that the ATC and Racing New South Wales came up with this flaky concept off the back of the Pegasus, it's just, the more you think about it, the more it falls over.
You still hate it?
I'd love to put it back on you guys and ask if you love it, why you love it, and then question you
outside the box.
It makes no sense, though. It will fall apart. Well, just because something's new.
You say it's ridiculous.
Everyone says it's ridiculous who's got half a brain. Oh, we're back on.
Well, I better go and see a neurologist. I need to get a full brain. Look, Matt's entitled to his view, and we respect his view, and everyone's got an opinion.
No, you don't.
But look, at the end of the day, one thing I take pride in is proving people wrong. People said I'd never win the Racefield case. They said, well, it was 100-1, and someone offered me 1,000-1. We won the Racefield case in the High Court. Someone said you'd never get parity. You'll never get money out of Treasury. We won that. So don't underestimate us. The amount of...
How many interested parties? One thing I'm curious about is, it sounds, from what I'm hearing, you do have a lot of slot applicants. How do you, if you get a flood of them, how do you whittle them? How do you determine which ones are eligible for the 12 spots and who doesn't? Does it go into a fair raffle or something like that? How do you pick your way through it?
I hope, Matt, that we do have that problem. At the moment, first in, best dressed, once the slots start to go, and we haven't even gone out on the road to try to sell any slots at this stage because what we had to do was get the terms and conditions 100% correct. So there was no doubt if there was any dispute in the future. So it's only today that we finalised the terms and conditions. But I guess the main criteria for us at the moment is first in, it will be best dressed. And then after that, we'll have to look at what other criteria we use if the slots are oversold.
Peter, despite Matty casting doubts on this event, it's obviously a fairly major decision. Can I just ask what sort of consultation process you went through in terms of industry participants and most specifically organisations like Racing Victoria? It's obviously Caulfield Guineas
Day. Or the MRC.
Where there's a wait for age sprint on that day. What sort of consultation process did you undertake with organisations like Racing Victoria?
Look, we took no consultation with Racing Victoria because it's like Kentucky Fried Chicken consulting McDonald's with a new product. You have to, you know, it was a confidential. We've been working on it since last October. You know, we believe in the concept. It's no good telling your competitor what your concept is going to be. We picked.
I think most people, their appetite is for Racing Victoria and Racing New South Wales to work in a patchwork sort of way, working together, not see each other as rivals on traditional days.
It's certainly not the view held in Victoria that we're ultra-competitive rivals.
Isn't that part of the problem, Peter? Is it seen as a secretive go about your business behind the scenes because your arch rival should know what you're doing? Shouldn't we be working together? Isn't that the great frustration of Australian racing, that it's not done together, it's done independent?
Matt, with 95% of the things we do, we do work together. I mean, some things like this sort of concept, you've got to keep to yourself because it is unique. We wanted to be the first out in the marketplace with it. So, look,
did you go to the marketplace too early? It sounds like a lot of questions arose that didn't have answers. Was it actually trotted out almost before the I's and the T's were dotted and crossed?
No. Look, as I said, we've done a lot of work since last October. And to answer the first question, yes, we did do a lot of consultation. We did do market research. We did look at if people would buy slots. We spoke to some high-profile people within the industry. And it was the best-kept secret because nobody that we spoke to actually leaked it out, which was a surprise. But as I said, we've been working on it since last October. Look, the good thing about it when it came out, some questions were asked, which we wanted to have answers to. And that's why we've spent a little bit more time dotting the I's and crossing the T's. The terms and conditions had been drafted about a month ago. But, you know, there's a number of contingencies that can pop up. I think Matt just brought one, to, you know, which is what if it's oversubscribed? There's things like that. We never, ever expected the amount of interest in it that's been generated, as you said.
So you just expected a neat 12 applicants. I mean, it just, yeah, okay.
No, look, we didn't expect a neat 12 applicants, but to be fair, Matt, I think in your view a few moments ago, you said no one would buy one, so you can't have it both ways.
Hey, Pete, just quickly, in regards to telecast rights for it, have you sold those rights? Will Seven broadcast it? Because it is the Caulfield Guineas Day and they'll be broadcasting Caulfield Guineas on free-to-air.
We have been approached by a number of other TV stations. As I said, one of the main things about the Everest was to gain the attention of people outside racing. Naturally, we presumed we'd get criticism within racing, but the amount of interest that's been shown outside racing has been unbelievable. You know, it's the first time we've had TV stations approach us. It's the first time we've had, you know, front page stories on racing and continue to have interest in racing. So it the whole objective of this concept was to attract a broader audience and people that don't normally come to race meetings to look at this race, give a race with a bit of personality and a bit of charisma, and it's achieved that objective already.
Pete, once again, we're running very late of time.
Just one more. Peter, the Pegasus World Cup was successful wholly and solely on the basis it had California Chrome and Arrogate in the field. Are there fears from your perspective that, you know, unless you do have those that at least two crackerjack horses, that interest in the concept may dissipate or wane?
Look, one of the criticisms, which is just totally ridiculous, is that it hasn't considered the Battler. I think the biggest winner out of this concept is the Battler. If I take Joe Janik as an example, he had a horse called Takeover Target. Now, he may not be able to afford to pay the $600,000, but imagine the number of slot holders that have bought the slots on speculation that he will have coming to him to do a deal. It's a life-changing prize money for a Battler. So if they go to him, they do a deal on 64.
He owned the horse outright and it won $8 million. He wasn't battling that much.
Yeah, but when he first got the horse, Matt, I think you've got to start looking at things.
When he first got the horse wasn't a champion sprinter.
Mate, I know you think the best thing out of Sydney is the Hume Highway, but you've got to start.
Pete, always good fun to have a chat. Good luck today with Winx as well.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Good on you, Pete.
Cheers. Debate, mate. We'll keep it going, mate.
Righto, mate.
See you.
KFC.
That is, well, he's right in one sense. The fact
I didn't
realise
I had such, you know, when you played the tape back, such a whiny voice. Maybe they're right. Maybe I, yeah.
It is engendering debate. We are so late. We've got to get a, we haven't taken a break. It's 45 minutes. We're going to take a break and we're going to discuss too. Lee Friedman is going to have a quick chat about what we can do with racing to get it back into mainstream, and we'll wrap up all the other races from the week as well.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Got a lot of SMS, Twitter, traffic coming through. Just a few snapshots. The public area at Caulfield on Saturday was better than the members. Sensational, user-friendly, great vibe in both areas. Well done to Caulfield from a VRC member. Chautauqua is vulnerable in small fields. That's why he got beaten. There's another one here, 1,400 metres at Flemington for Chautauqua. No thanks. Another one here that says, don't tell lies, Rupert. You like the money just like all the other owners. and then another one down here that wasn't too, I didn't get to see racing.com's coverage on Saturday, but they were saying that they weren't overly happy with the coverage of the secondary meeting. I do think we've spoken about that before, that the secondary meeting probably does need a bit more emphasis put on it on some of the broadcasts.
Don't know about that.
I've got some... why not?
We got 8 stakes races at the Premier meeting, including a Group 1.
You're showing 2 meetings.
If you're only showing 2 race meetings instead of Sky's got 4,000 of them, yeah. You've got to elevate the second one to some degree of status.
So you're expecting mounting yard coverage?
No, not saying that. But I think so. Maybe you can get an interview or something there. And I know it's logistically it costs a lot more money for racing.com, and they are looking at that in the future.
Just because it will drive turnover. I just think you have to.
Well, if I'm just thinking from the perspective, if I'm a viewer watching New South Wales racing, for instance, if there's a 8 stakes race card with a Group 1 and Hawkesbury, I want to watch them. You know, interviews, full coverage, mounting out of
but you can still get
Randwick.
That's what Channel 7's for.
So you want multiple channels now.
Well, we're talking about Channel 78, not Channel... Channel 7 will give you that coverage. Sure. Channel 78.
Every major Group 1 race day is on Channel 7 throughout the year.
Quite right.
Lee Friedman is joining us. Freddie, thanks for having a chat to us. We were talking earlier this morning about what we can do. Patrick Smith's written an article in the back of The Australian, which doesn't mention racing, but I think racing probably comes under the same umbrella. We saw what Nitro Athletics have done with their coverage and getting people back there for the sport of athletics, which is dying. The television figures for Saturday on 7 were pretty average, and they always are when racing is on television. What can we do to make it more viewer-friendly for people at home and people on track? Whitey this morning said, well, maybe we should run races every 8 minutes. I said, you're kidding, you can't do that, but you think you can.
Okay. Let's start from the start. Get your pens ready because we haven't got long, right? we all agree. We have to agree on several premises before we proceed, right? First premise is that we need a new product in racing that attracts people.
Correct.
Okay. Second premise is I think the trend is towards evening sport. So just accept that for the time being. 8 minutes might be ambitious. 15 is probably achievable. This is the job, right? A 6 race series that a club puts on, call it what you like, a pool of riders, multiples of 4, so either 16 riders or 32, whatever, 8 races a night every 15 minutes. The horses in the second race, the race thereafter, have to be in a pre-parade, saddle up, ready to go as the first ones go out. The riders are on 2 teams. There's 2 teams of 8. So the first race is drawn from 4 in the red team, 4 in the blue team, and from then on through the night they alternate, right? So no riders riding more than 4 races per half hour, every half hour, right? Are we getting it?
Yep.
So it's an 8 race program, opposite 4, jockeys, blah, blah, blah. Have a nightly, it's the same old situation as any other race meeting. 8 runners in each race because it creates each way for them. That's not too confusing for the... evening putter, and he gets a few aboard. And 6 race series, see how it goes.
It's like a big bash.
Like a big bash.
Yeah, this is almost...
Also like skins in golf, which I thought was fantastic, when 4 players were mic'd up and played 9 holes. Everyone laughed at Tackle when he did what he did. Everyone thought Big Bash wouldn't last. It is. It's a night venue. And you have a nightly team comp. In other words, you can bet on blue or red.
Yeah, the MRC took a very almost identical concept to, you know, certain organisations about 4 years ago, and for a few reasons it was kind of shelved and scuppered somewhat. But I certainly love the idea of creating teams. It's one of the things that separates racing from, you know, team sports, is that tribalism. And I'm right with you, Lee. I think it's a matter of when, not if, that a concept like this will get off the ground.
It's going to happen. It'll be a new product. Don't worry about people who say it won't work, because they haven't got a clue anyway.
Well, the thing about racing is there are a lot of organisations, participant organisations, that have a very loud voice, and that's a good thing. But people tend to rest on the conservative and do things, or there's a desire to do things. Yeah, as they have.
So this all happens over 2 hours, does it, Lee? Your six race, big bash.
Eight races. You didn't write it down. I told you eight races.
No, I get the feeling you're a negative, Matty.
As I said earlier, I just think, is there an appetite for rapid fire racing? Because
I'll tell you what, Matt. Before you go on, there's only one way to find out. Do a six race series and see how it goes.
Sorry, a six race series of eight races over 2 hours. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And you think logistically, 15-minute gaps with trainers with staff issues, multiple runners, all that
totally,
sort of stuff?
Totally achievable if they weigh out the same time as the first race, and then you go on 15-minute intervals from the horse to trading out the back ring. And evidenced by the fact that when you have a stuff up at a race meeting, they can pretty soon get it back on track.
Stewards' inquiries held after the last, that sort of thing? There wouldn't be much...
100%. You're on notice. You've got to front up after last, or you've got to front up at Epsom Road.
So this is a novelty away from your mainstream racing. The thing that I think, it couldn't become mainstream, because I think with comparing...
It's a concept that you've got to try.
Yeah.
There's something different.
All right, well, there's nothing wrong...
Thursday or Friday night?
Yep.
No
problem with it as a concept, as long as it's not... A lot of the big innovations have been tried to be implemented on the main game day, which is Saturday.
No. I do it Monday night.
Matty, you asked a question about whether there's an appetite for it. I think just directly through that question, you're asking about the current racing market and racing fans. This is about growing that into a new market.
Yeah, fine. Look, if it's a novelty off-Broadway, roll the dice. If
jockeys,
it doesn't come at great cost, then, yeah, sure,
jockeys
try it.
Mic'd
I'm not sure. That, I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Work, but... Earpiece in, can have a chat to the jockeys.
Mm. Just as Big Bash was, to test cricket. It's a novelty. But it's a bloody successful one.
Yeah. Lee, I like the idea. We'll push it. You push it. And let's. What odds do you think we've got any chance?
That's sort of another couple of things, too. You can have wild card entries from jockeys in case there's blokes who drop out. And I don't include Sydney jockeys. The best three jockeys in Sydney can be wild cards in on the night.
Do you think trainers and owners would support it across the board, Lee?
Well, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they?
We need to do something, so I like the idea. We'll see what happens.
Might be the big crash.
Lee, what do you make of Tom Melbourne on Saturday?
Oh, those who watched the race probably sometimes think he should have nearly won.
Yeah, he was terrific, Tom. You've been doing a lot of little things behind the scenes with Tom?
I do a lot of innovative things, Matt.
That's right.
but to be serious, on a serious note, we had to do something different there because that wasn't working. And I think a lot of work that we've done showed initially really good prospects on Saturday. So, yeah.
All right. Hey, interested to get a grandstand view from a trainer, a great trainer, about another horse. And I know it's difficult to talk about other horses, but just Chautauqua... The talk now is stepping up over ground and whether he just needs to be focused in a different direction to maximise his skills. What's your observations of Chautauqua at the moment?
Great horse. Give it to me. I'll do what I can.
See you later. Fair enough.
See you later.
Lee Freeman there. SMS coming through. If you want to get people back to the racing / pacing tracks, you have to reintroduce free new Tui's beer. And VB, Michael Loser Fellgate. Thanks for that. There's a clip on the way out.
I just think that people who go to the races, they're attracted to the rhythm of a race meeting, which is 30 to 35 minutes. You have to finish one race and the process, which is a good process, and everyone enjoys this rhythm. One race is done. You go and have a look. The part of the joy of it, saddle up, mounting yard, do the form, the horses race, and that you can't fit that into 15 minutes.
I think, but that's, you're talking about the current audience again. We're trying to grow the sport into a new audience.
But are you saying that the new audience isn't attracted to the things that attract us?
There needs to be more action
for
new people to get involved.
They still want to do the form. They still want to have a look at the animals. Are you saying that a new audience is so sterile that they don't want to look at the horses?
It's instant gratification. Oh. That's why test cricket is dying.
There's other places.
Because it's long and it's... And it's Big Bash. It's Nitro.
Go to the
it's
Big
fast.
Bash for that.
It's quick. We're going to take a break. Oh, you're listening to The Verdict. We're going to make one last phone call to see if Craig Williams has made his decision.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. It's spirited debate this morning. Lots of SMS and Twitter traffic having their 2 cents worth. There's one that's just come through saying, time for everyone to realise I've been going to the races for 35 years. It's just time to concede. Crowd numbers now won't increase. Focus on keeping what you have. Forget about spending more money trying to attract new race cars. Well, that's a definition of being defeated.
If you
very defeated.
There's
strategy.
A tweet here that I agree with because it agrees with me. along the lines of, if you think there's a new market for shorter, sharper, you know, instant gratification type thing that you're talking about with racing, Michael, we're not that different to the people who don't follow racing. The things that attract us to it are the mounting yard, are this, and a nice gap, and it's a social experience. Mm. This concept eradicates all of that.
For one special...
I just don't see I know what attracts normal people to the races, and none of this concept has any of those elements.
But people in cricket would have said the same thing about Big
Bash.
Exactly.
No, but the Big Bash is still, you're sitting in your seat, you're still socialising. The game's happening in front of you the whole time.
Why can't you socialise?
Which is what we're talking about, the fact that the game's happening in front of you the whole time. Racing lacks that.
I think it'd be brilliant. Just one night a week, and you can get some better... Look, Friday night's
at
the Valley.
Good luck to
Leaf
coming up with it.
It's really nice coverage. I like that.
Deep down in my... I just don't think there's an appetite. I think there's an appetite for racing to become proactive and learn a little bit of other sports, but I still keep saying it's apples and oranges, and there are certain things in racing that can't change, and you have to work within certain parameters.
We're not talking about making changes that are at the expense of what you described as mainstream racing. That continues as is, and we love that, but it's about testing something to try and grow.
Well, I want to see it tested because I'd love to see it work, but I would love to see it tested to see if it could work because I doubt it could.
Sure.
Out of time, gents. We didn't discuss Josh Cartwright. The decision is getting handed down today at 10:30 Melbourne or Victorian time. We'll go into that in depth on tomorrow's Racing Pulse show. I just spoke to Mark Guest, who is the manager of Craig Williams.
What's the verdict?
It would have been lovely.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is no final verdict. He's riding jump outs at Cranbourne Trials at the moment. So Willow has not made public, or he's not made up his mind yet. So that news will come through later in the day. Boys, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mick. Loved the KFC analogy by Peter Vallandis. He's now the Colonel.
The Colonel Vallandis.
Very good.
Yes.
All right. Nice way to finish, mate. Cheers. We'll see you again next week. We'll be back on Racing Pulse tomorrow.
Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter shipping.